Hi, and welcome to the Triathlon Age Group Journey Podcast. I'm Matt Summer, one of your hosts, and with me as always are Jay Kinney and Jillian Carlson. We're all age group triathletes, working professionals, moms, dads, and just doing the best we can to show up every day and give it all we got. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 2. We're super excited you guys decided to join us, and we've got a lot to offer. But before we get going, Jay, Jillian, how's the week been?
Oh, it sure has been one of those weeks. Definitely full of work, but training went well this week. You know, I got 2 days in the pool. Over the last several weeks, I've figured out that if I don't get 3 days in the pool consistently, I dramatically lose my feel for the water and my speed. So this year, I've really been trying to focus on getting in the pool 3 days, but I've missed 2 weeks in a row just because of work conflicts. And boy, at Masters today, I could just see again, it just, if it's like it falls off a cliff. So I don't know if there's other people out there that, you know, not being a swimmer as a kid, it is something that, man, if you're not consistent, it just disappears like so quickly. It can be so frustrating. So how about you, Jillian? What's been going on with you?
Yeah, and for some reason, like I thought that would be an issue, especially over the last few months, but somehow, for the most part, I've generally held on to my swim stroke. I mean, I haven't gotten faster necessarily, but I've at least somehow managed to hold on to it. Though I will say my swim this week was probably the worst one I've had in months and months. So I don't honestly necessarily even know why, if I'm honest. But, oh, well, so it's just one you forget. Yeah, it's just one of those days that you went into it with a good headspace, and none of the times the clock on the watch was going faster than it normally does, I think. So it must be the Garmin, right? So when I'm on a run and that clock is slower, right, it must be the GPS. It's not tracking just how far I'm actually going. But in the pool, it's touch to touch. So it's got to just be that those seconds are speeding up a little more than normal.
I totally agree with that. Yeah. It happens.
Yeah. So just blame Garmin, right?
Absolutely.
So hopefully it's back in sync when I swim again, and supposed to swim this morning, but did not get to. So had some late night work calls and then early morning work calls as well. And so maybe after this pod, I'll be able to break away and get to the pool. Otherwise, I might sub in an easy bike. I think that's something I'm trying to do, is get something in. And if the logistics don't work for one activity, to default to subbing in like an easy bike. So had to swap some things this week, but almost gave in on my bike ride and was all but ready to pull the plug after the warm up. And then I just said, you know, just see what you can do, and ended up being decent ride. So nice. was happy that I did that.
I always love when you surprise yourself. Yes. When you hold on sometimes like that, it's really, right. It is a boost of some confidence for sure.
Showing up is step number one. It's like just getting started. You can go in with that negative headspace, but then sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Because I've definitely had the times where it doesn't work. So you're like, yeah. Oh my God, just don't even look at the graph, because that thing is just a mess.
Yeah.
That's when you tell yourself your power meter's off. You didn't calibrate it. Something's wrong.
Oh, I'm frequently telling myself that the power meter's off. Yep,
absolutely. We can rationalize anything. That's coming from the accountant background too, right? You can make the numbers work any way you want.
Yes.
For sure. So Matt, this was a big week on Monday. Come on, tell us the race report about Boston.
Yeah, well, never disappoints. I mean, it's epic as always. I always say every year it's never the same race. I'm never the same athlete. It's never the same course conditions. It's never the same weather. And I think that's an important thing for people to remember when they go back to the same race repetitively, is it's never the same race. You know, I don't like to go in with expectations. And, you know, leading into this one, I had some expectations of myself, or just what I thought I was capable of, if I should put it that way. And that kind of got derailed. I know last episode we talked about the ankle issue I was dealing with, and you know, how durable it was going to be on race day. And well, It's stuck in there. It was not easy. It definitely hurt. You know, I was very pleased. You know, I told my son the night before the race, he likes to call me old man. He's like, all right, old man, what are you going to do? And I told him, I said, I'm going to run a 3:14. I'm going to be 6 minutes better than qualifying. I'm just going to get out of Dodge. Just be smart. And I said, considering the cards that were dealt to me, played my hand well. I did run a 3:14.12. So I was pretty well spot on for what I wanted to do, you know, and it was an interesting day. It was the third hottest Boston Marathon on record, the hottest since 2017. The conditions wrecked havoc. Some interesting statistics I got here. There were 980 DNFs on the day.
Wow.
Of the outside of those 980 DNFs, there were 2,974 medical encounters. Of those, 1,288 were on course, 1,686 were at the finish line, resulting in 126 trips to the hospital.
Wow.
There were 40 cases of heat stroke. And I mean, it just got bad. It was really the first hot day that they've had in the Northeast. And, you know, I think people went out and didn't pivot. They didn't adjust their game plan. They've been running in 30, 40, 50 degree weather and, you know, went out hard. And, you know, I found it quite interesting. Last year, I ran a 3:08, same course. This year, a 3:14. I mean, 6 minute difference. Last year, overall, I was like 6,800 something overall. This year, I was like 5,400 overall, being 6 minutes slower. Wow. So to me, that really just explained, I mean, you know, so maybe the ankle was a blessing in disguise because I could have been one of the ones that went out too hard and succumbed to the heat, but played my cards right. Always a great race. I mean, just the atmosphere, the people, the environment, I can't say enough about it. I mean, you always meet exciting people. I had the opportunity to meet two other people that were on the same exact streak as me, have ran it every year since 2016, which was very cool. That's a neat kind of thing. So once you have 10 consecutive Boston Marathons, consecutive finishes, you're no longer held to that time differential. So next year, when I cross that finish line, my time standard currently is a 3-hour and 20-minute marathon. I'll be officially known as a streaker. I still have to wear clothes. It's not that clothing's optional now, guys. But once I cross that finish line, my qualifying time of 3:20, I can run a 3:19.59 and I'm in. I'm not held to that time buffer. So that's why this year was really weighing on me with this injury, because I've come so far. But there were only, and this is a cool stat too, in this year's field, there were only like 650 some people with an active streak of 10 or more. So there really aren't that many people out there. So, you know, something to be kind of proud of. Never thought this would ever happen. But it's kind of cool when you sit down and kind of, you know, I got my 10 jackets, well, 9 jackets, and I got my 9 medals. And I told people, I think Jillian knows this, but what I've decided, and this is actually in my will, that when I die, my 2016 medal and jacket go in the grave with me. They just throw them in there. They don't have to be on me, just toss them in there. But then after that, in chronological order, all my children and then all my grandchildren will have their choice of a corresponding jacket and medal from whatever year they want. And they can choose to hold on to, hopefully something that they'll, you know, remember that was important to me and that they can be proud of. But just a great day. So it was a lot of fun. I do want to give a huge shout out to Chris and Darcy Bartel. Darcy's one of the athletes I'm fortunate enough to work with and have had been able to coach for the past 4 years almost. They have hosted me the past 3 years. And once again, this year, just their hospitality and just their caring and just they're so selfless. It just gives so much and, you know, gave me rides everywhere, made sure I was picked up. I mean, they fed me, just anything I needed, just so great people. So Chris, Darcy, if you're listening, thank you so much. And looking forward to being back there next year. The kind of joke is that I clean out the fridge when I'm there. So, you know, start saving leftovers now, guys, because I'm coming back.
Very cool. Well, congratulations, man. It is something to be proud of. So how is the ankle feeling?
It's feeling better. Recovery's definitely, you know, today was better than Thursday. Thursday was better than Wednesday. You know how it goes. So going to take 2 weeks off, solid weeks off of running, and kind of reevaluate, follow up with the orthopedic doc that originally saw me, and just, you know, give it its time and just let it rest. Yeah, that's a great segue, Jay. I mean, you know, for everybody, you know,
with it up
the new,
for you.
Yeah, there we go. I'm going to hit a home run here now. But with the new format, guys, you know, last week we talked about you know, kind of getting prepared for your race and what that might look like. But this week's theme lines up perfect with me. We're just going to talk about recovery, what that looks like for each of us individually, how we approach it, you know, different things that we might do for home remedies, maybe preventative things for recovery. And then there are a lot of professionals out there that you can go see that assist with recovery, whether it be like chiropractic, massage, something along those lines. So just kind of go around the table, talk about some of our best practices and share some of our tips and tactics with you guys. So
sounds good, but we still have to do your quote.
You're not
getting out of it, brother.
All right. Well, surprisingly, this is the one I had lined up, but this one really lines up too with the topic we're going to talk about today. So here we go. The two most powerful warriors are patience and time. I'll say that again. The two most powerful warriors are patience and time. Usually I start and I just kind of take all the thunder on this. So I'm going to let one of you guys jump in first so I don't give my insight and kind of ruin it. So one of y'all jump in on this.
I mean, I agree with that. Absolutely. I think when I even just started my triathlon journey, I'm not going to lie, I was one of the ones that, you know, got onto the training plan and you see some really quick gains and then you think it's going to just keep going like that. And that it'll be super quick and you think you'll just keep building and it'll compound at the same rate. And then you start setting lofty goals and targets and you start being a little bit more aggressive because you think, oh, well, if it took me this long to get from say 150 watts to 170, then it should take me that long to get from, you know, 170 to 190 and then 200 and 220. And, you know, next, you know, I'll be at like 250 watts by next year. And then when you're not there, all of a sudden, you can become pretty disappointed and you're just not being realistic and you're not allowing and having the patience and the time that's necessary to keep developing and growing and setting those expectations. And really, I think, you know, the benefit of the training is when you actually have the patience and allow for the time for everything to build and compound. And then you also reduce the risk of injury because if you go too fast, yeah, it feels really good, but it's going to bite you. And I mean, I've paid for it and I over and over and over, I continually see people that might've progressed a little bit quicker, but they felt good about it. Because it's usually you feel really good, you have an amazing week, and next you know, boom, that's when that injury hits. So
yeah,
absolutely agree with patience and time. And I've definitely been changing my mindset to allow for, instead of thinking, oh, well, you know, this year I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. And I've started to set a little bit further out goals of, okay, at 45, you know, I'd like to be, you know, do X, Y, or Z, and just allow that time to continue to build.
What struck me about the quote was this idea of it being a warrior. You know, I think of the training warriors need and how to master their craft. It doesn't come by waking up and saying you're a warrior. It's years. It's hard work. And warriors march a lot. You got to be ready for the long haul endurance of without food or whatever. I mean, you think of any war analogy with that. But time just keeps marching on. I'm getting ready to celebrate 25 years at my current employer, and patience and time is all that comes back to mind about what it takes to spend 25 years in the same organization. This all just aligns really well with the time of life, with doing triathlon, and similar to what Jillian said on the amount of patience and time it takes to meet your goals and to get to the PRs and maybe see it get broken again. And if you also don't recognize that it can be a battle, you know, you're gonna stop short of those goals because you have to fight through, like we talked about earlier, surprising yourself on the bike when you don't want to get started and so on. So it's a lot of great stuff kind of buried in just a few words on this, this yeah. quote. Good choice.
I agree with you. That word warrior is so strong. This makes me think about, it's not a favorite word of mine, but the failures. I mean, the failures we have in life is where we have to be patient and we have to take the time, but we learn so much more from our failures than we do from our successes. You can't appreciate winning if you don't lose. Nobody wins all the time. I mean, people in the Hall of Fame bat 300. That means they miss 7 out of 10 times. And they're the best of the best. So, I mean, that's something we got to remember is, you know, show up, keep swinging. And I mean, come on, you make it to the Hall of Fame if you hit 3 out of 10. Not every day is going to be Disney World. And I think this one really resonates with when we are fighting an injury or we are dealing with something, because you can't rush it. It didn't happen overnight. Usually it's not acute. I mean, yes, there could be an acute injury, hit by a car, fall, you break something. But a lot of times as athletes, it's the itises. It's the overuse things that we do to ourselves. You know what I mean? And it happens over time. And then it takes time for it to stop. But what do you guys say we jump into our conversation?
Let's do it.
All righty. So kind of as I mentioned, the thing we want to talk about today is recovery, what it means, what it looks like, and how it's different for everybody. To me, recovery is not always about coming back from an injury. It could be this week for me, it happens to be an injury and a race, but it could also be recovery from session to session. It could be from bike session on Tuesday to the next bike session on Thursday. What are you doing to put yourself in success, to be in a place of success to do the next session? So it's a big word and can have a lot of different definitions to it. A lot of times we think it just has to do with when the race is over or injury, but recovery is day to day when we think about it. So I kind of want to just start with, what are some of your favorite things, Jay, that you do at home on a day-to-day basis for recovery?
Oh my. The list is long. The older I get, the more I need. I think recovery starts with nourishing your body during your workout. I think that's number one. And if you miss that, you're putting yourself behind. And so the micro recovery you need for your next day workout, nutrition is essential. So I think that's the low-hanging fruit from the home remedy perspective. From a race perspective, I know I've talked about long before my tried and true ice bath and chicken broth concoctions and things. To me, the ice bath is something that I have found works for my body, and they still don't know the research. Is it really help or not? Is it placebo or not? But for me, it's been a positive thing. Maybe it is the way your body handles these things, but it definitely helps. And then foam rolling is important for sure for me. Again, as I get older, things tighten up a lot faster. So doing that regularly. And then my coach really forces me to get on the bike to spin easy after a race. It does make a big difference if you can get on that bike and loosen the legs up for sure. But I've also learned swimming is amazing for recovery. I love to swim after a hard run. It seems crazy because I'm exhausted or tired, but getting in the water just relaxes me. And I don't have to swim hard, but boy, I feel so darn good after a long run and then a swim. So there's something to be said about that. That's not quite at home because you got to go to the pool, but it's something I can control when I can do. So that's kind of why I called it a home therapy. So. Hope I didn't steal too many. Yeah,
the ice bath thing you mentioned, that's you can't go online now without seeing the cold plunges and everybody doing the barrels and everything. And you know, so Jay, when you do those, I mean, what do? Just fill your tub up with ice, or do you have a cold plunge? Or talk a little bit about that.
Oh yeah, so I mean, on the way home from a race, there's a 7-Eleven on the corner, and I stop and get the biggest bag of ice I can get, and go home. We start the water. I wait till the tub's filled, and then right before getting in, put in the ice because I'm already filling it with cold water. But if you put the ice in and then fill it, the ice will be melted and it doesn't stay cold as long. So one tip is be sure it's filled first, then put the ice in, then get in. Real important thing. You know, the cold plunge is different because that's your whole body. That's in theory supposed to be up to your neck. Sorry, folks, not for me. I'm draw the line somewhere. I just want my legs to feel better in the morning so I can go down the stairs. That's it, period. End of story.
I've done those before, and I tell you what, that initial shock, you kind of shimmy in and you're like, oh boy. And then, I mean, pardon me, folks, but then your stuff hits it and you're just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And I mean, I'm sorry, I'll sit there and I'll drink an IPA while I'm doing it. I've done that before and it's nice. And, you know, getting good carbs in there too, that's recovery. I mean, I try to stay in. When I've done them, I try to stay in like anywhere like 5 minutes, and usually I'm like, okay, that's good.
Yeah, if I'm doing, again, not the plunge, but, you know, getting my legs all the way up to my hips, 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
No worry for me. I feel like any shorter than that, I don't know. It just doesn't chill me out enough, I guess.
Now, Jillian, you a fan of those? Have you done? I know you're not a cold person. I know that.
Yeah, but there's a difference between it being cold and then just like downright challenging cold. And I have done an ice bath, like in a legit ice bath. It was kind of cool, actually. I enjoyed the experience. I have not gone and purchased bags of ice and filled the tub to do that. I don't know. Honestly, mostly probably just because either I'm not thinking about it, or because this after a race, if it's local, I get home and I've got to be doing stuff with the kids. So I just haven't had the time to do that or made it a priority, I guess. But it, you know, be interesting to try for sure. There is mixed information, right, as to whether it's effective or not. So part of it, you know, I'll be a little careful of. And I think for anyone that follows Dr. Stacy Sims, who's huge on performance and things that work with female athletes. So the way our bodies regulate themselves, the concept of an ice bath may or may not be as helpful for women versus men because of things that I don't know the words for. Anyhow, I remember reading a random article. So if anyone wants to actually know, or if you ladies out there are curious, I'd be curious if there's other ladies that find it beneficial. But she had done some Instagram feed or story, you know, about how they're all the hype, but it may not be as beneficial. So I guess that probably helped me just deprioritize it. But I think they're still kind of fun. And after a swim, I always finish my post-swim shower with cold water. But I think that's probably just because most of my races flip and have cold swims in them. So that's part of my prep work.
Your acclimation process.
Yeah.
My acclimation, yes.
Yeah. But, there you go. Well, what about you, Jillian? What are some other ones?
You know, it's interesting. I'm with Jay that swim, even if it's a swim workout, for some reason, but I do also build in a different recovery. He mentioned foam rolling. For me, at the beginning of a workout, or especially before that swim, I get up early in the morning, and I think I've mentioned on the pod before, for some reason, I can be laying in bed and just dreading going to the pool to swim. But, you know, I put that foam rolling right before it, and because I'm either sore from the previous day's bike or run, all of a sudden I'm thinking, oh, I'm craving that like foam roller. And I don't know why. I have a foam roller at home and there's a foam roller at 24 Hour Fitness. They really don't look significantly different, but the whatever is in the materials of the foam roller at 24 Hour Fitness plus the way their floors are, it's a totally different experience than the foam roller at my house on my carpet.
Or on carpet.
Even tried it on my like linoleum. Like, it just is a different feeling.
Yeah.
Anybody understand that one?
No, it's the give. Slight give, the carpet and the padding underneath. It's just versus the solid, rigid feel of the hard concrete floor. And
oh, it's just different.
I won't bore you, but there is science behind that. I've done a lot of it's continuing ed on the density of the foam and the surface that you're on. So, yeah.
So that combination is money for me, so much so that it can be extremely tempting in a good way, or motivating as well, to get me out of bed at 4:45 in the morning on a Friday to get that swim in, because I'll go for that recovery foam roll and a couple cracks of the back. Oh, it feels amazing.
Nice. Oh, I agree.
And then I guess the other thing is I haven't been as good about it this year as I have in the past, but I do have a pair of recovery boots. I don't have the Normatec name brand. I have Speedhound, mostly because at the time it was much more affordable and they had different sizes and I'm kind of small. So that one happened to fit me pretty well. And I, not that I necessarily believe it does anything, but after a long, hard ride or a particularly challenging run, it at least forces you to sit and do nothing, right? So I'll make my recovery shake and maybe like a little bowl of popcorn just to make sure I hit that carb protein ratio. And that's when I'll maybe throw on some YouTube and catch up on races or, you know, Lionel Sanders posts or TTL Instagram stories in a pair of recovery boots just to get those feet up and relax. So I think there's mixed information about whether they help or not. But if it forces you to take that rest you might need, it could be beneficial.
Yeah. Jumping on the compression bandwagon, I'm a big fan of like compression wear. I mean, that's one of those things that, you know, even sometimes while racing, you know, you see compression socks, but when it's all said and done with, I've got some great compression recovery socks that I put on that were 2x U that just help. They're amazing. They feel so good. After the marathon, I threw them on. When I fly, I will wear them. They're just super comfortable. And I just feel like they help like just push blood back up to the heart. I mean, that's kind of the purpose behind them for that venous return. But I'm a big fan of those. And the massage gun too. I really enjoy that. I mean, I also have compression boots. I do have the Normatex, and I've actually my favorite piece that they offer, and I think it's one of their most overlooked pieces that they sell, is the hip attachment. The legs feel great, but that hip attachment that Normatex has, that is money. I will give one tip of advice. Pee before you put them on. Yeah, I learned the hard way. You throw those puppies on, it looks like a big old black diaper that you pull up and you got to lay down when you do them. And I've put them on and I had them on like level 10. And next thing you know, you're laying there and it starts to push on the bladder and it's like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. So definitely go pee before you put them on. But I mean, I'll lay there with those on and I'll have the massage gun in my other hand and I'm just hitting trouble spots or trigger points. I mean, it just feels good. And, you know, we've all said on a couple of these things, it's like, you know, the science out there, does it substantiate it? Doesn't it? Well, you know what? If it makes you feel good and you are improving, do it. I think Amen. That's the thing, you know? Yeah. I mean, if it works for you, it may not work for everybody, but all those are great. You mentioned the foam rolling, both you guys did. And I mean, to me, that's part of one of my other favorite things that I think is important for injury prevention or recovery, and that's the warm up and the cool down. I mean, I think those are two of the biggest pieces that I try to incorporate. I'm very guilty of doing an adequate warm up sometimes. I'm always pushed for time, and I think a lot of triathletes are where we're pushed for time, so we cut the warm up, we cut the cool down. And oh my gosh, those are two of the most important things that I've learned as I'm getting older that I have to prioritize. I mean, I've even, I hate to say it, I've cut 5 minutes out of the workout to make sure that I have time to cool down now. You know, just doing that dynamic stretching, that foam rolling beforehand, and then afterwards, taking the time to do the static stretching afterwards. I just feel better. I feel like it allows me to get from session to session. So you guys, is that something you guys do as well? Just get to make sure you're hitting those?
Well, I'm curious with TriDot or how you get your workouts, does the total time of your workout include the warm up and cool down? Or is it say just warm up on your own? Is it?
Yeah. You know, the swims incorporate the warm up and the cool down into the main session. But beyond that, the bike does incorporate one. Every person's different. You know, they have this traditional 10-minute warm up. It's got some spin ups. It's going to have a couple, you know, 1-minute primers in it. But not every athlete's warmed up in 10 minutes. So, you know, it's okay to elongate that to make sure that you are warmed up to avoid injury. The runs always have a bunch of drills in them. You know, whether it's your A skips, B skips, karaoke, or just, you know, things to get the body ready to roll. So again, those are not incorporated into the time on our platform, but I still think they're huge to do. I mean, I know Jillian, you're huge. I remember whenever we go out and we go for a run together, she's got her own little area by the local park where she runs to warm up, and she's got her little strip of concrete where she does her warm up drills. So.
Yeah, it's right by the playground. So that's always fun. The kids will be playing on the playground, but it's one, that's one thing I don't ever compromise on the run. I always do the warm-up drills. I have found that if I skip them, I'm most likely to have some sort of niggle in my hip or hip flexor. And it's just an area that I found when I first started doing the tried out workouts many years ago. I had previously had issue after issue after issue with my run and not being able to run even in a race or just generally. And once I started incorporating the drills, all of a sudden the pain went away for the most part. And so it's just, that's my non-negotiable. But I would say, I think that, you know, the workouts in that program don't necessarily, except for the swim, have the best warm up and cool down. So I do think, you know, I know we do have some tried out listeners here and, you know, it'll have a Z2 warm up. But sometimes I think some people, you really do need to start out just a little bit slower, add just a little bit extra time on the front end or the back end. And, you know, speaking of workouts, and since the topic is more recovery based, I actually think a lot of recovery is not just before or after your workout. You have to consider the recovery that's actually embedded into your workout. And I think a lot of times we forget about that and we get so focused on doing the workout and you ignore the recovery in between the sets and the purpose of what that is. I'm very guilty of always pushing those recoveries to be as high or as hard as I can hold the recoveries. And I don't always necessarily think that's beneficial, especially if it's a day that you are not feeling as strong that, and you've got some solid sets. You really do want to prioritize the efforts. And if it means you slow down on that recovery to actually allow yourself to recover, I do think you'll see better benefit in the long run by giving in and actually allowing yourself to do the proper recovery. And there'll be different types of recovery that are intended, right? So some workouts, like I just did intervals yesterday and it's a walking recovery. And I remember I used to look at the zone range and be like, okay, what's the fastest that I can still get credit if I do this recovery in it? And it's like, no, that's not the purpose. The purpose is you walk the recovery. And I always thought, oh, I can't walk the recovery. Like that's not going to make me faster and stronger. And I've watched a million pro videos, right? And what are they doing? They run their set, they stop, they walk around, they're talking, blah, blah, blah. And then they take off and do the next set. And I was like, wait, those guys, they actually like stop in between a set. I used to think that was just being lazy or, you know, not with the like dedicated mindset of I'm going to crush this whole workout. And I was so wrong.
No, well said, because you know, focusing on the effort and giving the effort the best form that you can give it is the point of the recovery, is right, to be ready, reset, get your form back in line, and make sure you can execute that zone four, whatever the threshold interval, in the best form that you can. And man, yeah. Well done. Well
Thanks.
Said. Boy, you pulled that one out of the hat. We didn't even have that on our cue cards or anything, because you know, we totally script this, everybody.
Yeah. And I will say there is a time though, where the recovery, it could still be at a higher intensity and it's teaching your body how to recover at a higher intensity. So it's not always go super easy. It's learning the workout, the purpose of it. What is that set before and after, but really doing that recovery in between sets based on the right intent. So yeah, anyhow.
Nice. So I'm going to throw a big one out there that in the past couple, well, past year, I've really been trying to emphasize more for recovery. And I can get made fun of sometimes. I've been called a toddler. My own child has been like, seriously, Dad, sleep. Sleep has been the cornerstone for me. And I mean, I get up at 4 a.m., guys. There are nights I'm starting to lay down around 7:30, 7:45, just to get a solid 8 hours. And, you know, it's kind of funny. The more I talk about it to people, they're like, guilty. Me too. Like I'm meeting more and more grown adults that are like, oh, I'm in bed at 8 o'clock. And I never wanted to say it because it makes you sound like a toddler. I'm not an adult, you know, getting up at 4 a.m. And I found that just making sure that I prioritize that sleep, it's like, oh my gosh, I feel so much better the next day. The workouts are better, my body's recovering, the muscles feel good. I mean, I try to get 7.5 to 8 hours of sleep a night. I remember days when I had the kids were younger, I might get 5.5 or 6, you know?
Yeah. How about naps? You guys ever have the luxury of taking a nap?
I'm just not a fan. I they wake me like then I can't fall asleep at night. You know, people love them, but just don't work for me. I can't shut the mind down that quick.
I crave them. I don't get them, but I crave them, especially on a Saturday or a Sunday or midday at work, even if it's been a long day. Oh, I definitely crave them frequently.
I'm a big fan of the 8-minute nap.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. You know,
set your watch.
Interesting.
Throw 8-minute timer on it. Sometimes I don't even know or realize I fall asleep, but when that alarm goes off, you jolt and you realize, oh, wow, I did sleep. That I've done it at my lunch break at work. I close the door and just lay back because there's just some days I need a reset button. And the 8-minute nap has been a big it's been about 2-3 years that I've been playing around with it. And when I think of it and I do it, it is a real reset. Sometimes I won't deny you can wake up feeling really groggy and it's not energizing. It's definitely a different feeling than when you decided to do it. But most of the time, I'm more alert and ready to go and can finish the workday or whatever it takes. But check that one out. I think there's books and online. I don't know where I heard it, probably another podcast.
It's actually a thing now that like up in bigger cities, they are having facilities, almost like massage places that you can go into. And they have like individual rooms that have like super nice blankets and pillows and like white noise. And you pay them to take a 30-minute nap. Like they give you the surroundings and the environment and you can actually go in there and you pay a fee and you can lay there. And I mean, it is a thing.
Yeah. Our gym has a recovery zone and it is basically a private room. You can do the music or it has the infrared sauna that you can choose to turn it on or off or whatever, but it's basically just a quiet room to get your whatever recovery you want. I've never used it. But.
Yeah, I think sleep is without a doubt probably the most, I've heard this over and over from other professionals, that it is the number one recovery aid that you can use and have. Now, I will admit myself, it's so hard and it's hard to find the time to get all the sleep, balance everything, and then get your workouts in. And I know there's been times when I've thought about my upcoming day and I'm like, okay, I get to bed late and the next morning that alarm goes off and I'm sitting there going, do I get up and go work out or do I get the sleep? Or even the night before when I go to set my alarm, I'm thinking, what do I need? What is more important right now? Is it getting more sleep or is it getting up and doing the workout? And even within my own self, I battle with the right answer to that. I don't always know the right answer. I don't always have it. And sometimes I have to go with, I think I need the sleep. I'm sure I can do a workout later and hope I don't miss it. I know in the past, I used to be like, compromise sleep at all costs, make sure workout is done. And I just don't think that's the right approach that I've learned over time. But it's a really tough one when you're, you know, if it was just me, I'd go to bed nice and early as well, maybe hit it at 9 o'clock, but you know, when the kid comes to you and they're like, mom, I need help on this assignment, or, oh, hey, can we run to the store? I have a project due tomorrow. And you're like, oh my gosh. Next thing you know, it's 10, 11. You're like, I want to go swim at 4:45. Like I need to be in bed an hour ago. And as a parent, sometimes I can let that almost get to me and be like, oh, why are you asking me this? I have a workout in the morning. Like, no, I'm going to bed. And, you know, then you have to remember, hey, I got to be parent first, sport comes second. All right, let's go get your supplies. And then I will just reshift the next day. But it's challenging. And I think that's part of the age group challenge is balancing so many different demands. But the more you can recognize that sleep is important and do your best to maximize and get as much in, I think the better.
Yeah. I think right there with sleep is also just generally speaking, hydration and nutrition. I mean, those are two other things. I mean, to me, those are the three cornerstones of recovery that everybody can focus on. And you don't have to go buy a fancy pair of Normatex. You don't have to go buy a percussion massage gun. You don't have to do all those other fancy things. If you put the effort into sleep, nutrition, and hydration, I mean, you think about it, it's like a plant. You know what I mean? We're acting like plants when we focus on, you know, make sure you get enough sunlight, get enough daylight, or sunlight, daylight, same thing, but get enough nighttime, but then the right amount of water, the right amount of nutrition. You know, people always afterwards are like, oh, you just did that. You can go eat whatever you want. And it's like, you know, really, I probably could get away with it, but I'm not going to feel good later. My body's not going to say thank you. You know, it's funny, whenever I get done something, I'm craving, it's not the burger, it's not the fries, it's not the pizza. I mean, yeah, all that's good. I'm craving like fruit. Like, I mean, as soon as that marathon was over the other day, I asked Darcy when she picked me up, I said, can you bring me a cold apple, please? All I wanted was like a cold, crisp, juicy apple. And it was probably the best apple I'd had in weeks. You know, my eyes were always bigger than my stomach after these races too. And it's like you take a bite of something real savory and it's just, it's not doing the job. I try to remind myself the purpose of food is nutrition and, you know, to feed your body and to kind of make everything, you know, feel better, grow. I mean, food is thy medicine is thy food, you know, the old saying out there, you know, fruits, vegetables, the salads, just healthy, lean proteins, whole grains. I mean, I just really try to invest personally. A lot of my money goes into my dietary.
I'll kind of add a layer to hydration, obviously, is electrolytes. I've learned the hard way a couple times, kind of silly story. We were on a camp out with my son's scout troop. And while, you know, the boys are doing something, I decided to go for a trail run. It was a prescribed workout, but it wasn't an overreaching workout. But I got back, it was probably an hour and a half run, I get back. And almost immediately, I began getting so sore, and I have never had this experience where I couldn't squat down to unzip my tent to get in because I just was seizing up, and I'm sitting in a chair. I'm like, what the heck is going on? And I text my coach. It's like, I feel terrible. I started getting sore before the run was even finished, and she's like, do you have any electrolyte tabs? And I'm like, well, yeah, I actually have a bottle in the car, and I took two tabs within 10 minutes. Gone.
Yep. Oh, wow.
And I didn't realize I just completely didn't have any electrolytes through the run, or, you know, completely drained myself and didn't even see it coming, you know. So I have seen and heard from athletes that are getting DOMS, and I ask, are you drinking electrolytes? Are you just drinking straight water? And sometimes you just may not have realized you've buried yourself in a deficit on your electrolyte balance over a couple days, and it might take taking a couple tablets to get yourself recharged, and those DOMS might disappear.
Yeah. Well, I know we've talked a lot about things that we can do, but I mean, every once in a while, you got to go to a professional. I know we've all done it. I mean, you got a lot of different people out there we can go see. We've all been in quite the predicament where it's like, you know, I found myself last week, I was like, I have to call the doctor because I didn't know what was going on. I ended up having to get a steroid injection, you know, but what are some of the things you guys indulge in? Let's call it an indulgence. I mean, there are a lot of things out there that we can, you know, proactively go do versus reactively go do. You know, for me, mine was a reaction. I ended up having to go see that orthopedic doc. That was a reaction, not being proactive. So I don't know. What do you guys think?
I generally pay somebody to torture my body and twist it and push it and cause bruising in areas that doesn't deserve. But man, does it feel good afterwards. If you've heard of active release therapy or ART, man, you work up a sweat. It's like you've been in a sauna for 30 minutes because you're nearly screaming by, you know, through the process of someone sticking their knuckle in a joint that aren't the same size and it's incompatible. It's awful. But boy, you feel good afterwards. No, I mean, ART for me was a lifesaver it still is for the last few years, again, getting older. And, you know, your muscles, they do weird things when you don't take care of them, and they repair themselves in odd directions, and they get binded up with the fascia of your body. And you need somebody who can get in there and just break it loose. Literally, that's kind of the process. And you will scream. You will say a lot of cuss words. Your therapist will probably be snickering behind you, enjoying every moment of torturing you. But that's when you know you have a good therapist that's digging in. And that kind of related to that cupping has been something that I've tried out. The people, you know, the big red circle bruises that you might see on people. I've had my my calves cupped pretty regularly. And that's more preventative. Just my calves are always super tight, rigid, rock hard. And cupping has really gone a long way to keep them more soft and supple, to keep your Achilles healthy. Essentially, it's a big part of it, as well as, you know, making it survivable.
Yeah, it's funny you bring the cupping up, because you got to be careful with that stuff. I mean, a lot of the cupping and like muscle scraping are two things that, I mean, you yourself can buy right off Amazon. Like I've made the mistake myself. You know, I have a cupping set and I have a muscle scraper. And if you don't know what you're doing with it, you can actually create more problems than what you're dealing with. So, you know, for anybody out there, it's like, you see it. Yeah, it's a great novel idea. You can get your own set. You might think you're saving money, but definitely be careful. I mean, some things are best left to the professionals, you know? So, and Jay, I will tell you, with that ART stuff, I'm always most worried when I walk in there and it's a massage therapist or an active release therapist or a PT, and they're this real small little person, because I know they're going to bring the boom, and it's just like they can just get in that area, and it's just like, you know, it does. It's a hurt so good. It's almost sadistic, you know, like a guilty pleasure.
Definitely. My PT is also black belt in jiu-jitsu. She is the toughest woman I've ever met. And elbows, knuckles, thumbs, it doesn't matter. I don't know how she does it all day long. It's incredible.
Yeah.
100% on the ART train. To me, it's a miracle worker. So massage sounds nicer because you just go for like 60, 90 minutes and it's straight up just massage, right? Now, my ART person, Jay, is not quite as intense as yours is. Now, there's definitely times where you're just like, oh my gosh, that does not feel good. But it's crazy because there's a lot of assessment, you know, as they're pushing on certain joints, or, you know, okay, hold this, or, you know, give against this pressure, or don't give, et cetera. And they're testing things out. And I'll go in with pain in my, you know, left hamstring or my right hip flexor. And next thing you know, he's like drilling his knuckles into my left calf. And I'm like, why are you in my calf? Like, no, it is my right hip. Like, that is what hurts right now. And by golly, I go and do the run the next day and I freaking don't have any pain. And I'm just like, how did that work? And so, yeah.
Ever had the one where they're like working on your hip and you feel it in your ear?
Yes. Yeah.
Just or translate that all the way.
Or they'll be like working in a weird spot under your arm or in your rib cage. And you're like, what is this doing? And my gosh, I don't know, but I do swear by going and seeing the AR, we call it ART, but yeah, active release therapy. I think if you can find somebody who's good, I had gone to see mine here in Seattle at the recommendation from my sister. So she'd had some issues when she was heavily into training and lifting. And it's just one of those ones where I should do it more regularly and not just go see him when something's hurting.
I think there's one other, I don't know, heads up if you've never done it, is you're going to be sore in that spot for a couple of days. And the bruising and inflammation that is caused is actually part of the process. It's part of the healing. It's part of it, like charging up your system to go ahead and work on back on that area. So, you know, be smart. Art, this isn't necessarily something you do in taper week before a race. It's maybe something you do 3 weeks out, make sure you recover from that. You're going to need hot and cold treatment afterwards just to keep things feeling okay, because you can get pretty bruised up for sure. But like you said,
I will say, yeah. I've never been bruised, so
okay, good.
So you might not. I mean, it could just depend on your person.
And true.
If it works for you, that's great. Mine happens more for me, so I will not go recommend getting bruised. Telling my guy to feel free to bruise me up, but
fair enough.
Yeah.
Or you might be sore, right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, definitely, definitely will be sore. That calf was sore, but the hip was fixed and the soreness faded. So I'll go with it.
So, I'm going to share my guilty pleasure with you guys. And it's dry needling.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Love it. Love it. And I hate needles, but it is the biggest guilty pleasure that I think I enjoy. And I got a guy local, and I mean, this is kind of funny. I mean, he's a physical therapist here, and he knew I had gone to another clinic and had it done, and we were friends, and he calls me, and he says, "Hey, Matt, I just got certified in dry needling. Can I practice on you?" And I'm like laughing. I'm like, "Can you practice on me?" And he was like, "But yeah, can I?" And I was like, "So you want to stick needles in me to learn?" And he was kind of like, "Well, yeah." And so we reached an agreement. So he doesn't charge me for dry needling. So I kind of have, you know, can go to him when I need it. He does my dry needling, and it's I need to be more regular about just going for maintenance versus being reactive when something's wrong. And again, I use those words intentionally, being proactive versus reactive. And I think a lot of injuries can be avoided when we're proactive versus reactive. But he gets in there, and I mean, he gives me a tennis ball. I've got my own tennis ball. He hands it to me. And I mean, my parasympathetic nervous system, I mean, I'm starting to sweat. My palms get sweaty, the breathing. And he's like, "Dude, I haven't even touched you yet." And I'm like, "I know, but I know it's coming. I know it's coming." And so sometimes he doesn't even tell me, and he's just sitting there, and I'm like, "All right, tell me when you're going to start." He's like, "The needles are in." And I'm like, "Oh my God, I didn't even feel it." You know, he's got the newest addition he got a therapy dog. So he's a therapy dog in the clinic. And last time I was there, he was working on my calves, and I've got the tennis ball in my hand, and I'm laying there with my ball. And you would think the dog came over and took the ball. No, the dog didn't come over. The dog came over to my opposite hand, which is hanging down there. And the dog lifted his paw up and put it right in my hand, like to hold my hand. And it was the cutest thing in the world. So I've got a tennis ball in one, and I'm just clenching it. Teeth are like gritting, and I'm just waiting for it. The other really weird thing that he does, and I don't do this one regularly, but he hooks up electric stim to the needles. And I mean, you got to remember, he was practicing on me, and he's like, "You got to see this." So he took a picture of it and went like video and showed me how my glutes were just like twitching. And I was like, "Jeff, this is hilarious." You know, but sitting there, what do they call that? Twerking or something like that, where it's just like shaking back and forth. And I was like, "This is nuts." Yeah. But great feeling though. I mean, just it really penetrates deep. I mean, you know, like foam rollers just get that real superficial layer, but muscles are dense. So, you know, dry needling is kind of my guilty pleasure, kind of personal indulgence when I do something like that.
We call it the guilty pleasure because you have to pay, right? So
yeah.
Any tips and tricks you guys have found to make it more potentially affordable? Do you have a deal with a place, insurance? How has it been structured for you?
Well, I mean, Matt's free on his dry needling because he happens
to have,
right? Which they hooked me up when I was in North Carolina one time. It was an interesting experience. But I've called around in Seattle area, and they don't like the term dry needling. So you could do acupuncture out here, but to actually find somebody with dry needling, I have not been able to. So I just do that. Insurance can cover some forms of ART and massage, some people's insurances, right? So not everyone's, but there are people out there that do have insurance where it would cover that. So that would be a huge benefit. And if you are one of the lucky ones where insurance covers that, you definitely should take advantage of it.
I've been fortunate to find a PT practice that had what they call a concierge service. So every year I negotiate a pre-purchase plan of a certain quantity of visits for the PT. And then I've started working with a strength and conditioning coach through that same practice. So I do a two times a month with strength and conditioning and once a month with the PT. But I find what I end up happening is I wait for mid-season, and then I'll go see the PT maybe 4-6 weeks in a row or something and really get into the middle of the season to make sure I'm in a healthy spot and group them up. And they don't mind, just as long as I use 12 a year, they don't care how I use them. That's the point of the concierge. Right. So check it out. Maybe a PT practice will cut you a break for a bulk discount. In other words, because you're going to be a regular customer, and they presume that you're going to be a steady flow for them. So
I've been fortunate, like I said, that, you know, obviously the physical therapist was a close friend of mine, and you know, professionally I've got some relationships with physical therapists and orthopedic docs and some other health professionals just from what I do, that just kind of professional courtesy, helping each other out. So, you know, very lucky. Live in a small town where it's kind of nice that you can kind of barter sometimes, if you know what I mean. So definitely helps out there.
Nice.
I've got one more that I don't know if it's third party separate. I guess some people could do it at home, is sauna.
Yeah.
I've become a huge fan of the sauna at the gym. And I sit in there for 10 to 20 minutes after every swim, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, if I swim 3 days a week. And I don't know. I guess I like the extremes, ice baths and heat. But I definitely read that there are some benefits to sauna. Certainly opening the blood vessels, getting the blood flowing into your muscles afterwards, after a workout. They say it might reduce soreness and so on, helps recovery. There's some studies that suggest you'll be able to recover faster based on some of the information. The other thing about sauna, though, it's not for everybody, especially with heart challenges. If you have heart disease, it's something you definitely need to be cleared on to make sure sitting in the heat is healthy. And the other thing about sauna is it'll put you behind on hydration. So, you know, the minute I finish swimming, I always have a bottle next to my lane. I drink as much as I can, refill the bottle, bring the bottle in with me to the sauna, so I don't get too far behind sweating it out in there. And then the other benefit is some heat acclimation that I think is real. I definitely come into the spring and early summer not feeling the heat of, you know, getting used to it as I used to. And I do believe it's because of regular sauna use. And supposedly it makes you a far more efficient sweater, if you will. Sweater. As in the ability to cool yourself with your sweat. I have noticed my sweat rate has increased over the last 3 years. So it's definitely something that is changing physiologically my body for that. So something to keep in mind. It's not, again, for everybody, but I found a lot of benefit out of it.
And that's a good point you brought up there, Jay, about the medical stuff. I mean, a lot of the things we've talked about, I mean, even foam rolling. I mean, there are a lot of medical conditions out there that you shouldn't foam roll for, along with all the different compression, even the cold plunging. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there. So, you know, a lot of the things we mentioned today, guys, before you maybe try it or give it a shot, just maybe make sure you check with a medical professional and make sure it's safe, because not everybody, we all have different conditions and it may not be suitable for you.
Yeah, definitely. I got one more. I feel like we're starting to wind down, but another thought. When we talk about recovery is different from taper week. I think some people use recovery week as a term, and taper actually has a form and function to it to keep you sharp for race day. Yes, it is lighter volume and so on, but it isn't technically a recovery week. That's how I think of it. I don't know how you guys think of that, but would you think it's safe to call it recovery week? Is that misleading?
Misleading. I don't think of it.
That's nodding.
Recovery. Yeah. No.
Yeah. It tapers definitely about keeping your pencil point sharp. I mean, that's what I always say. It's like you're taking the SAT next Saturday, your pencils are sharp, you can only dull them. You can't make it sharper, you can only dull it now. So be careful what we do.
Oh, and taper week isn't just 1 week. Let's just say taper.
Yes. It's a period of time.
Definitely a period of time. Depending on the race, your taper might be 3, 4 weeks potentially. So,
depending on what it is. Very much so.
All right. Sorry. I think I'm finally worn out.
No, this has been fun. I mean, Jillian, you got any others to throw in there?
No, I mean, I think the only thing is probably, since Jay was talking about taper versus recovery week, I think, you know, recovery week we didn't actually really touch on, but the importance of, depending on what you're recovering from, I think, Matt, yes, you do have injury, but you just came off a marathon, you're taking 2 weeks of no running. And I think part of in that recovery week, and this is going to be extremely individual to you as a person, as well as what, again, you're recovering from a race perspective, did you just do a full Ironman or did you do a half or did you just do a sprint? And the time it might take you to recover and what activities you should be doing, there's active recovery and then there could be complete recovery. And, you know, especially if you just got done doing a really long run, a marathon, for example, or within an Ironman, you've got to give yourself the ability to fully recover. And recovery might not just be what your muscles are feeling, right? I think, Jay, don't you, at the end of a season, take a longer period off because it's your ligaments and your joints. And after a really heavy, hard season, there's so much more that's breaking down in your body than just what you might think or feel. And so if you are doing some of those ultra or extra long distances, I think it really is important that you are extra careful on your post-race, post-event, post-season recovery protocol, and know that you might need to be recovering in more aspects than just muscular, what you feel, what you see. And it might be beneficial to take more time off or to, you know, spin the legs on a bike and forego some runs or go swim for the week, whatever it might be. So
I'm going to piggyback real quick on that because, Jillian, you hit the nail on the head with the physical recovery. And I'm going to hopefully make Dr. Jim Taylor, one of our guests that we had on a previous episode, the mental recovery. We didn't even skim that surface today, guys. Yeah. That's a whole other episode of its own. So I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. But I always tell my athletes, you know, greatness occurs when the physical and the mental are in alignment. And when a race is over, it's not just the physical recovery, it's the mental recovery. I mean, we can really quickly build up a resentment towards training and kind of an addiction towards training. You got to mentally let things go for about a week or two, unstructured, and just, you know, there's a reason sometimes you have 2 weeks of just kind of do what you want, because then you mentally get to the point where you're like, okay, I'm ready for the intensity, you know, and the body's ready for it at that point then too. But if you just hold on to, I mean, again, sorry guys, I'm guilty. You can't get fruit from the tree year round. You can't. And you got to give the field a chance to rest. You got to plow it. You got to set it up for the next harvest, and physical and mental. I mean, there's going to be divergence when race is over on the physical and the mental side. We got to get them back in alignment.
Yeah. I'll be honest. It's taken me years to believe that, but it is, it's true. And it's taken forced times of recovery to be like in my mindset would think, oh, this is horrible. Like, I want to actually be getting back to things. And next thing you know, you're like, no, actually, that was really beneficial for me. So,
yeah. No, I think this has been great conversation today, guys. I mean, this has been a lot of fun. Talk about this.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you guys say we wrap it up? Jay, you want to do the honors? Jillian, one of y'all?
I thought you were going to. No, it's okay. you were been rolling into it, so I thought you were just gonna
give somebody else an opportunity here and there. You know, it's a team effort.
Okay,
I'm in recovery. Oh boy.
Yeah, I'm out of.
You want me to do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
See, guys, we are so scripted. This is great.
No, because I kind of had checked out because I thought you were doing the wrap up.
Yeah.
So I mentally was
threw
done.
Us the curveball there.
I threw you a curveball.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening into the Triathlon Age Group Journey. I hope you're enjoying the new format of season two. Clearly, we are, and still getting our feet back under us after taking some time away. But hey, if you have a topic that you'd love for us to talk about, feel free to send it to us. You can reach us on Instagram at Triathlon Age Group Journey, or you can reach us on our email account, triathlonagegroupjourney@gmail.com. All right, folks, that was about all we had. That's all we got to give. It's been a long week, but hope you all have a great one.
Yeah, you guys do the same. Make it a great week, guys. Train smart.